All right, we're going to get started for the few of you that are in the room that aren't staff. Welcome. We have a quorum. We're waiting on Representative Jefferson Moss. He should be coming in here in any minute. Ryan is excused and Victoria are both excused today. So we will run with those of you that you see in front of you. We have a very busy agenda, 23 items. I was just giving rubbing Larry a little bit about how many items he put on the agenda today, but we're going to get, Ryan is online. Oh, okay. Perfect. Ryan is joining us online. So never mind to my previous comment about him not being here. We have a new board member, which we'll get to in a minute. An executive director report, review and updating of several existing board policies, updates on the budget, statewide logistics strategy, a number of actions on contracts, incentives, and revision of the interlocal agreement with Spanish Fork. And then we'll get to see some public comment later in the day. Our agenda, 4 o'clock roughly, is public comment time. So for those of you in the room, if you want to speak, Diana is, there she is, waving her hand if you want to give her a card. And then obviously, we'll keep it to 2 minutes, which is our standard policy. And again, if you don't get to speak, inlandportauthority.utah.gov. All right. This is my favorite part of the agenda because it's first and it's quick. But we are going to welcome our newest board member. So for those of you that don't remember, we had the ability in statute to have two at-large board members that the board kind of decides on with the executive team. And we filled one of those with Bill a number of months ago. And we've left this one open as we've ebbed and flowed with the different areas throughout the state. And we all kind of came to the agreement that Joel Ferry, Director of Department of Natural Resources, would be a great fit for everything that we're working on, especially with our wetlands policy movement and then everything that we're doing on environmental concerns. So Joel, we're so excited for you to be here. Do you want to introduce yourselves and just let everybody know? I mean, the two people that don't know you in the room and maybe the four that are online, but this is recorded and someone can listen to it later. Let me turn you on. What are you on? There you are.
Number 10. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. And it's a pleasure to be with you today. So thank you, Madison. Perfect timing. So I'm Joel Ferry. I am currently serving as the executive director of the Department of Natural Resources. And so there is a lot of, overlap and interest with the properties and the way that these properties are managed, utilized, and developed to natural resources of the state of Utah. Before taking this role, I served in the House of Representatives and took on a lot of different roles, namely around water and natural resource issues. And before that, I was a farmer. So I grew up in Box Elder County on a farm on the Bear River. And these issues are very important to me. I see the impacts that rural communities, Inland Port, can have and how beneficial doing these the right way can really impact both life, quality of life, both for good and bad. And so this is our opportunity. I believe this is our opportunity to do things the right way, and we can really work together to accomplish some great things. So I'm excited to serve. Hopefully my experience, my background can be an asset to the board and can help continue to move the state of Utah forward. So thank you.
Thanks, Joel. Well, welcome. And we're going to do the oath of office right now from Carol, who is our notary public and a UAPA staff member. So Carol, we'll turn some time to you to swear Joel in. I think you have to stand for this, Joel.
Perfect.
No. Wrong one. There you go. You're good.
Okay, perfect. Please raise your right hand and repeat after me. I do solemnly swear.
I do solemnly swear.
That I will support.
That I will support.
Obey and defend the Constitution of the United States.
Obey
and defend
the Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution of the State of Utah.
And the Constitution of the State of Utah.
And that I will discharge.
And that I will discharge.
The duties of my office with fidelity.
The duties of my office with fidelity.
Thank you and welcome to the board.
Thank you.
Any comments from any board members on Joel's appointment? All right, Jerry, it's all yours.
Thank you. I've had opportunity to tour former Representative Ferry's farm, and I will tell you, he is a true steward of the environment. It's been amazing. It's incredible to go up there and look over the operation, see what they've done and how they handle agriculture. I think farmers, in my opinion, are the ultimate environmentalists. And but anyway, well done, and will be a pleasure to serve with you on the board. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator.
Just so everyone's aware, Joel, we've consulted Joel on all of our properties that had wetlands associated with them. So this is just a nice synergy of bringing you on the board, and really appreciate your input that you've had for us the whole way that we've all served and continue to serve. So welcome. All right, let's move on to the approval of the January 10th board minutes. If you look in the packet, and you were emailed these earlier, and they are online, if you can believe it, we haven't met since January. Boy, time flies, but I'll take a approval in a second on those minutes.
My light's on, so I would move that we approve the minutes of the Utah Inland Port Authority for Wednesday, January 10th, 2024.
I'll second.
Perfect. We got a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
All right. Thank you. That is unanimous, Larry. All right. Let's give Ben Hart a little bit of time for executive director report, and then we'll move on to a few of the logistics strategies. So, Donald, if you'll be on deck to present next.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to the board. We appreciate everyone's time and attention, and to your service. We know this is a sacrifice and the many hats that all of you wear. So thank you for being willing to serve. This is our first board meeting in a few months. We don't hold them during the legislative session just because we have a lot going on. So I do want to just take a step back and bring everyone up to speed generally with how things are going in the project areas. Not going to go through every project area. I'm going to go through a couple items first, but we are going to highlight one of our project areas in particular, allow one of our associate vice presidents, Danny Stewart, to speak just a little bit about that. But before we get to that point, just a couple of upcoming events. Donald is going to talk about the good work being done with CPCS here as the next agenda item. But we are working with CPCS to do a couple of open houses, one in Cedar City on April 17th. We will be sending out more invites in the future. We've had good RSVPs for both of these, but we would welcome the public, anybody who wants to come. It's an opportunity to interface, learn about what the Inland Port will be actively pursuing and our vision for those areas, working with the local jurisdictions. And the next one is in the Northwest Quadrant. The next day, I don't have the date on here, I apologize, it's April 18th, but that will be from 4 to 7 at Edison Elementary in the Northwest Quadrant. So our opportunity to listen and to learn from those in the area, for those in the area to learn about kind of what our goals and objectives are in these specific areas. We would welcome everybody to attend those meetings. A couple of key project area happenings. Actually, I'm going to go to this one first. I wanted to show just again, we have taken a badge of honor in terms of being transparent with everything that the Northwest Quadrant is doing. So in a conversation with our chair a couple of weeks ago, I opted to and we discussed showing our org chart in public just so people understand and know how we are expanding and where we are expanding. We're dedicating more and more resources to our project areas right now. And part of that means we're going to be bringing on another associate vice president to handle the central Utah area. So Jenna is with us online. She's not here in person, but Jenna Draper will be joining our team. We're grateful to have her joining the team. She brings a wealth of knowledge and experience to the central Utah area. So we will have some things that are moving in that area, that part of the state during this calendar year. And so she will be a great asset and a great resource for us to come on board and help us at the Inland Port. So we're grateful to welcome Jenna Draper to our team. But is one of the other reasons I wanted to show the org chart is, again, we're staying dedicated to a few things that I think have to be hallmarks of our organization. When we talk about transparency, internal controls, and making sure that the organization is staying very, very clean in the way that it operates, that's one of the other hallmarks that we are making sure stays at the forefront of what we're trying to do. We want to be able to have good internal controls, particularly around money. We want to make sure that we have good outside eyes that are part of reviewing our policies and procedures. I want to commend Ben Byes and Amy Brown Coffin. I know Amy's not here today, but for doing an amazing job helping to shape this organization in a way that is not just transparent, but has very, very strong oversight. We feel like moving into the future, we know there's going to be a lot of money coming through our organization. We want to make sure that we are good stewards of that money, that we're doing right by the public, and that we're being transparent with the proper amount of oversight. We also will see, I think, continued investment and developing out the logistics side of our operation as well. Over the next couple of months, we'll have some things that we're working on, not just with CPCS, but also otherwise, that really speak to the heart of what logistics can be here in the state of Utah and the help that this organization in particular and the role we can play. So I want to show that. I want to put that on the public record. We'll have these slides obviously available to the public for those who are interested. And then last but not least, I wanted to hit on just a few key project area happenings. I think there have been a few people who were wondering if we were going to take the Weber County project area plan and budget to this board meeting in March. We've opted not to do that. We want to make sure that the plan and budget with the wetlands strategy that we're developing is thoroughly reviewed, that it's got buy-in from all of the different stakeholder parties, and that all of the questions that we have, any other outstanding issues are answered. So we are anticipating that we are going to push that 2 months, and we are going to bring that to our board for approval in May. We want to make sure that the wetland strategy associated with that is accounting for all the dynamics that are relevant. We've started to put out some maps, and people have noted that there are a lot of wetlands in the Weber County project area. We're not going to hide anything. We're going off of historical data, but we also want to balance with what's on the ground today. So we're finding the right balance between historical data, what has been considered wetlands, and then ultimately future characterization and development around these sites. So we want to make sure that we're in a good place and we found the right balance there. So we are pushing that a couple of months just to make sure we've got enough time to get all of these strategies vetted and ready for the board review and final approval. The other thing that I'm going to mention just before I turn the mic to Danny for just a few minutes on a brief update of Mineral Mountain, the board agenda that we're looking at today, there's a lot of items. This is going to be much more characteristic of what our board meetings are going to be like this year. We're not going to be doing the same number, and I've mentioned this before, but we're not going to be doing the same number of new project area adoptions as what we did last year. We will be slowing that down significantly, and the business that we're dealing with today will probably be very similar to other business items that we'll be working on in the future. The only thing we're missing today is another formal new announcement around an incentive, and this agenda would have been perfect in my mind, but this really is what we're doing to help these local communities hand in glove, and especially with the logistics and economic balance with our stewardship. So we're probably going to see more agendas like this in the future. We don't want to overwhelm the board or the public. So if there are questions from the public or the board, obviously, we're happy to meet one off and be able to just go through any items that are of interest. We've been doing more and more stakeholder meetings. We feel like those are very valuable for us. And so we appreciate the board's patience as we have probably a lot of items related to the development of these areas economically and logistically in the future. With that, I'm going to turn the time, Danny, if you can take just a few minutes and walk us through the Mineral Mountain project area in particular with a quick update, that would be great.
Thank you, Ben. Good afternoon, Chair Osborne and members of the board. My name is Danny Stewart. I'm Associate Vice President for Regional Project Area Development. Today, I'm happy to update you on a few exciting items of interest in the Mineral Mountains Inland Port project area in Beaver County. As you know, the Mineral Mountains Inland Port consists of three non-contiguous zones located in Beaver City, Minersville Town, and the Milford area. We've had some great things happening in each of these zones, even in light of recent cutbacks by Smithfield, which has had a very large economic presence in the county. And this is the second round of reductions from Smithfield in the last couple of years. It's had a pretty dramatic negative impact on the community, but got some good things going on in our project area to help offset some of this. So first, in Beaver, in January, it was announced that Unitech Manufacturing, division of Midgley Huber, is expanding their business operations in Beaver's South Peaks Industrial Park along the I-15 corridor. This expansion is bringing 50 new jobs to the community. Excavation is underway for new construction of this 50,000 square foot facility. To date, 30 people have been hired. They're operating in a temporary space in Paraguna, in Iron County. Since this announcement, Beaver City has received several inquiries about adjacent properties in their industrial park. So that's very encouraging. In Minersville, city authorities are looking to potentially trigger incentives on at least three parcels in the project area there. And in Milford, the Fervo Energy hydroelectric geothermal electric project is drilling wells in the project area and has begun the process of fracking rock for this 400 megawatt hydroelectric plant. They're utilizing the Smithfield rail loop, which is located in the project area, for unloading train car loads of sand for this process. In addition to leasing their loop track, Smithfield is also leasing water rights for economic development projects in Beaver County. Also, some of the affected Smithfield personnel are investing in trucks and equipment. They are hauling materials for the Fervo project for Milford Mining, which is ramping up, and the Rototherm, another geothermal project that are now underway in the Milford area. We're happy to report that the Inland Port Authority is having a positive impact in the Mineral Mountains project area, and that we're enjoying working closely in collaboration with our community partners in Beaver County.
Danny, thank you. That was perfect. And one of the reasons we wanted to highlight Mineral Mountains in particular, because, I mean, we're talking about the reuse of a loop track there. We're talking at its heart about synergy between logistics and economic growth, and also the tremendous convening and leadership we're seeing from local officials. The commissioners in Beaver County have been amazing. When we all come together and work together, which I believe is really at the heart of what the Inland Port is all about, we see really cool things happen. I think a lot of people across the state didn't believe anything like that would ever happen, you know, with the recent announcement after Smithfield. But again, I believe the community working together can achieve really amazing things. And so we're seeing, again, the reuse of the loop track, bringing the sand in, the partnership with Fervo, new companies that are coming in. And Danny, thank you for your great work in the area. We do have, and I want to make this public, Caitlin, but we do have in the board members' binders just a really quick, Madam Chair asked if I'd hand this out, a quick wins in each of the project areas so that the board members have just a real quick understanding of what we're doing in every one of those project areas. And Madam Chair, that is our executive director's report.
Thanks, Ben. Appreciate it. Let's move on to the CPCS update from Donald and our logistics strategy. Mic is on, Donald, all your time.
Great. Thank you very much. Let's use this one. This one's better. Just a moment. Let me pull up the slide deck. Okay, just a second. Forgive me. I'm just trying to get this to go to presentation mode. There we go. Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the board. Glad to be here today presenting you an update on the Utah logistics strategy. As you know, the team has been busy working to really kind of delineate a strategy both statewide and focused on the Northwest quadrant for the logistics potential for infrastructure development and economic development and other key strategies. Recently, we've completed nearly between 50 and 60 consultations with business leaders in logistics, in finance, public officials, ports, steamship lines, other groups who are really critical to the work that we're doing. That's been an incredible experience to be able to kind of gain from them a perspective on what Utah has to offer, on the strengths and weaknesses, so that we can really frame the strategies correctly and give you the best advice possible. We've also looked at a lot of different data sources. And so I'm just going to give you a snapshot today of some of our early findings. A lot of the recent work is focused on really understanding the importance of logistics in Utah and the Northwest Quadrant. We asked a number of questions to try to get there. One of them is, what is the system and why is it so important for Utah's companies and communities? Why do public sector agencies in Utah invest in the logistics system? Where are the key logistics infrastructure assets located and what role do they play? Who operates, maintains, and uses the system? And what kind of cargo shipping does that enable? And what are the notable statewide logistics needs, issues, and opportunities? We've been doing this work and this early work to really assess the state of logistics in Utah. And that leads us to the next phase of the work, which is coming over the next few months. And that is really the logistics strategy. So taking a look at the assessment was, where is Utah now? And the strategy is, where can Utah be in the future? And the strategies are really intended to help guide UIPA and its partners in terms of reaching its logistics and full potential goals. So a lot of this work, as Ben Hart mentioned earlier, will be available to the public in the open houses that will be taking place in April. But then the team will be pivoting, working with the board, with UIPA staff, to really get into the strategies and tactics of what should be done next. So let's take a look at some of the foundational information that we've uncovered. What are the major trends impacting logistics in Utah? Well, really, it's a story of population growth in Utah and the West. It's the major driver of change. Really, the population growth, especially on the Wasatch Front, but also southwestern Utah and the Intermountain region in general, is really critical. This is part of a broader trend of growth in the West and the Sun Belt in the United States. And additionally, e-commerce sales have really impacted Utah logistics in a fundamental way. They've more than doubled, changing the way business in Utah is done in terms of warehousing and fulfillment. Other major trends impacting Utah include shifting trade patterns. A big part of this is just the shift, for example, from China to Mexico, and then supply chain shocks. As we saw this morning, tragically in Baltimore, Maryland, with a ship striking and taking out a bridge and essentially closing down for the near future a major East Coast port. So these things can happen, and Utah needs to be prepared for them. Within the Northwest Quadrant, these broad statewide trends have impacted things in the Northwest Quadrant. The map here shows, and it doesn't show by parcel boundary, but it shows kind of by parcel center where all the new development has been taking place by year. And you'll see kind of a color coding there, but the red is the most recent development that we're seeing in the Northwest Quadrant. There's been record development over the last few years in terms of industrial real estate. The increasing land value has driven the lease rates up by 9%, so that's another issue. But this does continue to be the center of gravity for logistics in Utah. We estimate that one out of every five truck trips that begins and ends in Utah begins or ends in the Northwest Quadrant. It's rather remarkable. So it continues to be a highly concentrated place where there's a lot of activity, and this is shaping the future of the possibilities for this area. But statewide, there's a robust logistics network serving the entire state and connecting the communities of the state together that depend on freight transportation. This map shows where those freight intensive land uses are located. The darker the hexagon, the more intense and the higher number of companies that are located there. But you'll see this also highlights agricultural regions and oil producing regions, including the Uinta Basin, and illustrates how logistics are really critical statewide. We've also placed the project areas on this map to put that into context, since we are taking a look at each of those as well. Utah is very interconnected globally, continues to be heavily reliant, however, on ports and other gateways to facilitate overseas trade. Utah's international trade value has grown by 55% in the last 10 years. Mexico has overtaken China as a top trading partner. So that's fundamentally changed a lot of the routes. There's still an awful lot moving to the global gateways on the West Coast. But increasingly, places like Laredo and El Paso and even Nogales are becoming more important trade gateways for Utah, especially as we're seeing manufacturing shift in significant ways from other parts of the world, including Asia, to Mexico as part of this near-shoring trend, as we'll call it. And that will be an important component of the way that we structure and develop some of the strategies for Utah. This map highlights some of those key trade connections. I'll mention that Europe is incredibly important. We've actually de-emphasized one of the arrows there because it was almost overemphasizing the amount of trade that we have with Europe. A lot of it is actually medical equipment, technical equipment, and even gold. Gold is a big deal, and that's shipped often to the UK. We've interviewed and worked with a lot of individuals and others involved in air cargo and have learned a lot from those opportunities, and we'll continue to have a lot of different things that we're going to be recommending in that space. Domestically, on the left, you'll see with the purple arrows some of the key trading relationships that we have in the Northwest, excuse me, in Utah. You'll notice that two of the key arrows there are Utah to California, and the other one is Utah to Chicago. From our analysis, those are really the two key trading partners, which is surprising because we do have very strong trade relationships with Idaho and Colorado especially. But what's interesting is that we also have strong trade relationships with Texas, to a certain degree Washington, that are even stronger than some of the trade relationships we have with nearby states like Arizona. There's more to come on this, but some of these early findings have also indicated that there's a lot of through trade moving to through Utah. On the right, you see the map illustrates the direction of that trade. There's an axis going from Washington to Texas and back between aerospace and other key industries in those states. If you think about it, that means a lot of trucks that are essentially using Utah and facilities like US 191 and US 6 that are transiting between Seattle and Dallas. Although the I-80 corridor is really the predominant one that's moving through Utah. And the thing that's been interesting from the data is just the number of trips between the U.S. Midwest and California. And the question there is, what role does Utah play in capturing some of that movement for value added? And that will be another part of the strategies that we look at. Just the last few slides here, there's so much to discuss, but just boiling this down to a few points. Some of the top strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats we've heard as we've especially interviewed and consulted with different stakeholders in the logistics space. Utah has a strong connection. It's well connected. It's competitive, safe, meaning low cargo theft, stable business climate, enduring frameworks, and collaborative relationships between business and government. On the weakness side, we've find repeatedly that there's a lot more that needs to be done to kind of educate and enable the private sector to understand UIPA's mission, purpose, tools, financing levers, and ways to partner with the private sector. So there's quite a bit of work to do there. Rail does also continue to lose market share locally and nationally. This is a major concern. The railroads are concerned about this. They're concerned about a number of different things. One of them is that land needs to be set aside and preserved for rail corridor linkages and sidings so that that is not completely lost to residential, which is another major issue. In terms of opportunities, improving competitive access to multiple modes for Utah shippers, this includes air cargo and rail. Nearshoring, I mentioned previously. Top threats, believe it or not, housing affordability was cited frequently, impacting the logistics workforce. I know that's a recurring theme in Utah this year during the past legislative session. And then infrastructure, congestion, land prices are other key threats. Within the Northwest Quadrant, I'm not going to go through all of these. There's a lot to digest here, but it is an area with incredible potential, including capacity for near-term growth. There's a possibility for advanced manufacturing and clusters of aerospace, and there's rail serve. The main threat that the Northwest challenge the Northwest Quadrant is facing is just the rapid pace of development and the fact that there could potentially be lost opportunities for different types of uses, including advanced manufacturing, if we continue apace. I'll point something out at the bottom. Also, there's extensive air cargo leakage to LAX and San Francisco and other airports, mid-skill workforce challenges, and lack of truck parking. There's a number of other things to discuss, and we'll be detailing these more in some of our additional reports and as we get into the strategies. Couple of key takeaways here, things that we heard repeatedly and we've boiled down. In the absence of a strong vision for Utah's logistics system, the development pattern over the next few years is likely to resemble that which we've seen over the past 3 to 4 years, which is a lot of warehousing and a lot of distribution centers. And so that's something that is critical to consider in terms of what Utah is aiming to attract and grow and whether the trajectory needs to shift. Then second, building on that, while the status quo patterns will yield benefits and economic benefits, if it's uncoordinated, it may not unlock the full potential of the state, including the key economic clusters the state wants to grow and build. Ben has already mentioned the open houses. And with that, in the interest of time, I will thank you for your time and attention and look forward to briefing you further in the future. Madam Chairman, back to you.
Thanks, Donald. Appreciate it. Any questions from the board? Yes, you are at seat 8 there? 9, okay.
Yeah, I'm just curious, on the trade corridors, were those both truck and rail or just truck?
Correct, all modes.
Okay, all modes.
Yep, all modes. Okay. Yep, absolutely. And the global one was especially tilted towards both air cargo and maritime cargo. Yep.
Thank you.
Perfect. Thank you. Ben, are these slides are available to the public?
Yes, they should be.
Oh, sorry.
Yes, they should be available to the public. And my guess is for the next several months, Donald will probably be presenting at probably every meeting, because this is an important topic for us, making sure we get this right. Madam Chair, I speak for the board when I say the board and the port are never going to invest taxpayer dollars as a gamble. Anything we do in investments and infrastructure is going to be well thought out, data supported, and I think we're absolutely going that direction, and we want to be open and transparent about what we're doing. So thank you, Donald.
Thank you.
Thanks. Great information. Appreciate it. All right, let's turn some time over to Ben Byes. He is Deputy Director, CFO. He's got the next two items. So Ben, your mic is on, and you are.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First item I have has a number of presentations for the board's consideration. Most of these will have action items later in the meeting, but I'll just talk through them each now. The first one will not have any action items. Just a recap of where we're at budget-wise for the Inland Port. This is through period 8, so that's February. Again, we're on a July to June fiscal year, so getting to the end of that time period. This first column here shows our operating expenses. The approved budget was just over $6.5 million. You can see we're trending nicely in all our categories, surplus and everything other than that legal fees category. Again, some unexpected legal fees, also some doubling up as we've been working on some land in the Northwest Quadrant that the board is well familiar with, has had some extra expenses there. But overall, operating budget is in good shape. Let's move on to the next category, Inland Port development activities. This first category is the Salt Lake City differential. Again, we're using some of that for the grants that were awarded a few months back, and that will be held aside for Salt Lake City as we work through the interlocal agreement and decide what we're going to do on studies going forward. Now, master plan study, again, this is Donald's group that we just heard from, CPCS. That we've paid some of that money towards so far this year. Acquisition of property. This is also trending a little bit negative. So this is property that we own in the Northwest Quadrant, or leasing, I should say, in the Northwest Quadrant. We're hoping to have some of that leased out and plan to have some leased out throughout this remainder of this year, which did not happen, unfortunately. So we're still pursuing some leads very aggressively and hope to have those leased out in the next few months here. Lastly, public-owned infrastructure improvements of just under $6 million. This is the Stadler contract that the board approved at the end of June 2023. We expect to wrap up our payments with the remainder of that $7.9 million this year. Fees and transfers, both that housing affordability payment and the transfer to the bond will be based on the tax differential we see from Salt Lake County. Planning on receiving that any day now, and we'll make those payments. So overall, again, we're trending just under $500,000 under budget. So all good news on the budget front there. For the board's information, we do have summaries of our expenditures year to date by vendor, as well as an individual listing of all our payments to each vendor that we've made this year, if you'd like to go through those. So that is all I had for the budget update. Happy to answer any questions, or I can move on to the next item.
Any questions, board members? All right, let's move on.
Great, thank you. The next item to talk about is some financial services contracts that we would like board approval on. A little bit of background on this request. When the Inland Port was started, is 100% dependent on the state for financial services. So with many of the employees coming over and the line item appropriation for the Inland Port coming over from the governor's office of economic opportunity, the port used their personnel for financial services. I'm going to stop sharing this. And that has kind of been how the port operated for a long time. We have taken over financial services from GOEO, but we still use the state's financial systems as well as a lot of other state programs. In our statute, we are authorized the ability to use the state services for things like the Attorney General's office with our wonderful Assistant Attorney General, Brooke McCarrick. We use DTS, we use state finance, and a few others. State finance has proved to be a little bit tricky in that they're not set up as an internal service fund. So they're not used to charging other agencies for their services. We've kind of been piggybacking off of that state contract. And we talked with Division of Finance late last year, and they said to continue with their systems, which would be Finet, which is how the state records all their financial transactions, pays the bills, and then payroll would be $1.7 million a year. That was clearly cost prohibitive based on our budget of about $6 million. And so we decided to go out and find some other services, service providers for these services. So we got bids on all these. All of them are small purchases. They're well under the $50,000 a year. But because we would like long-term contracts on these items, we are coming to the board for approval on these. So we've got three proposed vendors that we'll ask for your approval later in the meeting. The first is for a financial services system, and the one we would like to go with is Cassell. They're a very common financial services package that many counties and cities throughout the state use. So really designed for an organization like ours. It's about a $7,500 setup and about $9,500 annual for that system. For payroll, we like to go with Paylocity. It's about $350 setup and $3,500 annually. And finally, we'd like to get approval for a contract with a CPA firm to help us with our financial statements. Again, this was something that Squire did in the past. They opted out of that contract. We did the financial statements internally last year based on audit feedback and just the amount of work that took staff internally. We like to hire KNC CPAs. They were recommended by MIDA. That's who they use for many of their accounting functions as well as their financial statements and their audit. We're just looking to use them for financial statement preparation. They're estimating 45 to 70 hours in year one and 30 to 45 hours ongoing, about $125 an hour. So we're thinking somewhere in the neighborhood of $7,000 or $8,000 in year one and then a little bit less than that, going forward. So altogether, much cheaper than staying with the state. Again, we bid out all these contracts, feel these are the best, services to provide, going forward. So, again, we'll ask for board approval later in the meeting, but happy to answer any questions on those items right now.
Ben, make sure I did my math right. So those three contracts, roughly around $21,000 annually compared to roughly a $1.7 million
to say okay. The state. Yeah.
This is a heck of a deal. Jerry, turning the time to you.
You know, this isn't the only organization we've been having problems with. Most of the land use, our land use authorities across the state. As you mentioned, MIDA, they found a solution a few years ago. We've got the Point of the Mountain that's running into the same issue we're trying to deal with the state on. And I think we've come up with really, really good solutions. Congratulations, Ben. I think we'll be a leader in this because there are other organizations are going to want to participate.
Now, just so I'm clear, we were not paying the $1.5 million. That was what they were going to charge us if we moved in this direction.
That's so, correct, yes.
So the public is aware that was not money
yes.
that we did spend.
Yeah, okay. Thank you, Senator. And thank you, Chair.
Appreciate it. Thanks, Ben.
Great. I will move on to Resolution 2024-03. Part of this break off from state payroll has had some other components of it. One of those is the Inland Port's inclusion in Utah retirement systems. Again, all of our employees are part of that system right now. As we start paying payroll deductions on behalf of our employees ourselves, URS would like a resolution from the board to continue to be part of the retirement system. So obviously a very important benefit to our employees. And this is just to ask URS to include us. They're going to take us up in their May agenda pending approval from the board on that resolution. And happy to answer any questions on that. There's no change to costs or contribution percentages. The plans are the same. It's just being paid by Inland Port directly instead of through the state payroll system.
Any questions? Keep rolling, Ben. I know you have one left.
On to Lakeshore Learning Materials. Later in the meeting, we would like approval from the board just for a clarification on this incentive. In the August 21st board meeting last year, the board approved an incentive for Lakeshore Learning of 60% of the assessed property tax for 25 years. Lakeshore was founded by members of the Kaplan family and still controlled by them. As is common with some of these large build-to-suit transactions, they have a separate company that is doing the development of the property and a separate company that is actually going to be the tenant. So they're both controlled by the same organization. Mandana DC3 is the development company. They will be paying they will be paying the property taxes. And therefore we just like clarification that we can pay that incentive to Mandana rather than directly to Lakeshore. Lakeshore will still get the benefit of that. Again, it's the same parent ownership group of the company. But to make sure that we're paying the company that's actually paying the property taxes, we would like approval to pay that to Mandana rather than to Lakeshore. Because the board approved it to Lakeshore, we just wanted to get that clarification that we could pay it to Mandana instead of Lakeshore. Any questions from the board on that one? Great. I'll maybe do my two. I'm going to present two policies, and then Caitlin will be presenting two as well. The two that I'm presenting are up for their first review this board meeting, so we'll ask for approval to changes in our April board meeting. And I will share this policy. So the first one that I want to talk about is the property tax area and property tax differential use policy. We made a couple of changes on this one, and they're in sections 9 and 10 that are presented here, project area amendments and minor revisions. The way that we want to differentiate this is when we need to come to the board for approval of a project area plan and budget amendment. When we'll do that in one meeting, when we'll do that in two meetings, and when staff can make those changes. So as we did with the VRC project area in January, we had an addition to that project area. We took that to the board for a two-meeting cycle. That is our ongoing state. If we're changing any of the statutory requirements, including the property area, we'll bring that to the board for a two-meeting cycle, make sure everyone is well notified and has the chance to review those changes. Other changes that we may make, which could be something like incentive percentages, targeted industries, performance indicators, we'll just do that in a one meeting cycle. They're not affecting the boundaries of the property or any of the statutory requirements, but if we do need to make changes like that, we'll bring them to the board in a single board meeting. And finally, minor revisions, which may be a landowner opt-out or updates to informational items in the project area plan and budget. We'll do that with the executive director approval and will not require board approval. That's the changes of that policy. Happy to answer any questions on that. Great. The last one is the personnel policy. We made a number of changes on this one. Much of that was moving some of the items from from the code of conduct policy to this policy. We felt they were better situated in this policy. Based on our insurer's recommendation, we had a legal review, which Brooke did, of this policy. We had some changes from that. Otherwise it's just some minor changes on language throughout. So again, pretty minor changes overall, other than swapping some of the items from the code of conduct to the personnel policy. And if there's no questions, I will turn it over to Caitlin.
Any questions on those two policies?
Again, we'll bring those back to the board in April for their approval.
Great. Thanks, Ben. Caitlin, we're going back up to you for the four policies that you're presenting.
Yep, just two. Just real quick, two policies that we actually do not have any changes for, but just our annual review. The first of which is our records retention policy. This policy exists to protect both transparency and appropriate privacy in UIP records and ensures access to records by providing guidelines for records management, preservation, and disposal. Again, no updates here. I will note that I recently moved into the position as our records officer. I'm also our communications and marketing director. Sorry, I should have introduced myself. Few things that we are doing with this policy with records requests in general, just as an update. We've done a few things on our website to make things a little bit more clear for media and for the general public when they submit records requests, that they get standardized messaging and understand that there's a clear process and, again, just setting expectations so they know how things will move forward. And then second policy is just the segregation of duties. This policy supports the Utah Inland Port Authority in developing the underlying principle of segregation of duties being a shared responsibility of dispersing critical functions among multiple individuals throughout the organization. And no changes there either. So any questions for me?
Any questions for Caitlin? Thanks, Caitlin. We'll have an opportunity to vote on these later. Ben, back to you for the two project area updates.
Thank you. The first one I'd like to talk about is, again, a resolution to create the TV Public Infrastructure District. That is the Twilla Valley, but a public infrastructure district cannot have the name of the county in it. So it's not television, it is the Twilla Valley Public Infrastructure District. I presented on this public infrastructure district in the January board meeting, so we're coming to the board for approval of this creation. Again, this district would encompass the areas of the Twilla Valley project area. 100% of landowners have to opt into that. We have that. There's just two landowners. They are connected in this development. This is to help fund public infrastructure and improvements of three and a half million square feet of rail-served industrial warehousing, manufacturing, cold storage, and data centers. The site needs water, sewer, natural gas, power, roads, all that fun infrastructure that is needed to begin development of the area. So what we have before the board is a petition submitted by the landowners to create the district. We have governing documents that were created by Gilmore Bell, who's a legal firm that I think probably does nearly all of the public infrastructure districts throughout the state. Again, the point of this is to help with financing. We can then pledge that tax differential to the district. They can bond on that tax differential and get the money up front to begin the development. We also required in these governing documents that if they do receive an AIB loan, which they have requested and we hope to have before the board next month, they're required to repay that AIB loan from the bond proceeds, which is the plan from the district. So we have before the board a resolution providing for the creation of the TV Public Infrastructure District as an independent district. So again, it's totally separate from the Inland Port. It authorizes and approves the governing documents and interlocal agreements and appoints a board of trustees and authorizes other documents in connection with the Public Infrastructure District. The board of trustees for the district will be made up of by the property owners of the property. Again, once the board approves this, it's pretty hands off from the board's perspective. They're their own government entity at that point, and are subject to Open Meetings Act, public procurement of that type of thing going forward. So, that is all I had. Happy to answer any questions on that resolution.
Any questions, board members, on that resolution of the TV Public Infrastructure District? All right, Ben, okay. Spanish Fork.
I'm almost done. I don't like talking any more than you like hearing from me.
We're just making our way down the valley.
Here That's right. Here. So down to Utah County, the VRC project area. We have an interlocal agreement that we signed as part of that project area. Spanish Fork requested an amendment to that based on our ability to trigger by parcel. So this is an important tool of the port. Rather than triggering the entire VRC project area at once, we can trigger by parcel. So we'll do that over a number of years. That's really important because this industrial park, especially where it's controlled by, you know, six major developers along with a lot of other property owners, is really going to be coming online over a number of years. And were we to trigger this all at once, we would lose out on a lot of the increment that would be available. And some of this may not be coming and being built for 5 or 10 years. So because we're triggering by parcel, Spanish Fork wanted to make sure that was clear in the interlocal agreement. They had worked a lot with the local taxing jurisdictions down there when they were contemplating a CRA for this project area. So all this is doing is adding some language that says that UAPA may adopt trigger date resolution for different properties within the project area. There'll be only whole parcels. We're not going to split up any parcels, but it just allows for those multiple trigger date resolutions.
Okay. Any questions?
If I could, these are we've done this other places in the state. This is a, you know, kind of a boilerplate, or that what we're using is rather boilerplate. So works out well what we've done in the past. Thank you.
It makes sense with all the landowners that are included in this area. So thanks, Ben. All right. Let's move on to what's the last one?
The last one is, yes, resolution 2024-02, still in VRC. So following up on that interlocal agreement, we would like to trigger some of the parcels in the VRC project area. So working with Spanish Fork, they've identified 200 parcels that they would like to trigger. These are ones that were already developed or were built, prior to the Inland Port starting. And I will share a map of that.
And that's in our packets too.
It is, yes.
Of course.
I didn't mean that we had, other land. I mentioned that we have done that in the past, but I don't think we've done this in the past, but other land use authorities in the state have. So.
Correct. And that's right. Thank you, Senator. The orange parcels identified here are the parcels that we're triggering. Again, it's 200 of them. We have a bunch of county property right here in the middle. It's not going to have any taxes on it, but go ahead and triggering those along with other development in the area. So, we will do that. Again, doing it earlier in the year is helpful for the county and their rate setting process. They can account for those as they certify the tax rates. So we do like to trigger these at the beginning of the year when possible. What this means is we'll get the tax differential for these 200 parcels, based on property taxes paid in 2024. And a year from now, we'll be receiving differential for this project area. So kind of exciting, from my perspective, at least as a finance guy, is starting to see some differential coming in a year from now. This will be the first one outside of the Northwest Quadrant that we'll be getting differential on. So again, happy to answer any questions from that. A list of the parcels and this map is in the board member packet and online.
I know the answer, but just remind the public this is all agreed upon by the county, all the landowners. This is the direction that they are all in agreement to go forward with.
Yeah, so landowners, again, it won't affect them in any way. They pay their property taxes as normal. This is really a benefit if we're looking to do incentives in the future. Again, if we want to do a 25-year incentive for a company that decides to build in this project area in 10 years, that's really hard if we don't have differential coming in. So this allows that to extend out and really maximize the use of that differential.
Perfect. Thank you. Any other questions before we move on? It is 4 o'clock on the dot. You did dang good, Ben. Thank you for doing that.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Let's open up general public comment now. Once we will begin, I have three of them in front of me. We're no longer accept any additional public comment cards. It's the same rules that apply every time, so I'm not going to go through it. We're going to allow for 2 minutes. We will conclude at 4:15, but I think we can get that done with the three members. I'll just name all three of you if you want to come up and sit at the dais or just behind the dais. James King, Katie Pappas, and Joan Gregory. So we'll go in that order if you want to come up. Mr. King, your time is yours.
My name is James King, resident of Mill Creek, but I'm reading a letter that was sent to me by Jim Westwater, who lives in Utah Valley. I'd like to read it to you today. The Spanish Fork Inland Port is a project that is not needed and is harmful. It will cause damage to our health, to wetlands, wildlife, farming, and the health of the ecosystem. The port will cause increased truck traffic, congestion, and air, noise, and light pollution. The additional air pollution will shorten our lives. Paving over wetlands and uniquely rich farmland will make Spanish Fork hotter and adversely alter the character of our community. We like Spanish Fork as it is now, a pleasant, safe, and healthy place to live. However, city officials have inadvertently approved what they don't really know will happen. I was told by a city official that the city does not know specifically what's going to be built in the approved expanding industrial development. No thorough, rigorous, independent, science-based, and widely publicized study was done to assess the need for and the possible, even likely, harm this inland port project will do. I was told by a city official that no such study was required or needed or done. These inland port projects are largely a waste of taxpayers' money being used to subsidize private developers and unnecessary development at our expense and at the expense of human and environmental health and safety. Let me add one more thing. I'm 96 years old, so what you decide today won't affect me much. But for my posterity, they'll have to look at ugly warehouses surrounded by asphalt instead of a wetland full of natural and beautiful life.
Thank you, Mr. King. Ms. Pappas, time is yours.
My name is Katie Pappas, and I live in Salt Lake City. Congratulations to Mr. Joel Ferry, Executive Director of the Utah Department of Natural Resources, on your confirmation as a new board member. I'm hopeful that your expertise will influence port development decisions. According to the DNR, wetlands make up only 1.5% of the land surface area of Utah, a tiny fraction of the state. Roughly one-third of those wetlands are located around the Great Salt Lake. Inland port project areas within the Great Salt Lake Basin, 5 at last count, directly threaten 50,000 acres of wetlands, uplands, and playas. Building near wetlands is the antithesis of sustainable growth. What potential monetary gain justifies the destruction of such critically important lands? Natural areas within port boundaries provide food, water, shelter, and space for a variety of species, including some that are threatened or endangered. Significant archaeological sites are also present but overlooked. The DNR, along with the Division of Wildlife Resources, created a 39-page document titled A Landowner's Guide to Utah Wetlands. It is a comprehensive, informative, and instructive guide that applies here, as it includes important information on wetland identification, restoration, and conservation. With all the threats we face, including to the Great Salt Lake, our focus as a state should be on restoration and conservation, not destruction. Mr. Ferry, you have an opportunity as a member of this board to influence board and state priorities regarding a sustainable and healthy future for all of us and our incredible natural world. As head of the DNR, you have an obligation to bring science-based data to the table and speak on behalf of those who cannot. I hope you will be successful.
Thanks, Ms. Pappas. Joan, time is yours.
Can you hear me? Yeah, okay. I'm delivering this comment prepared by Terry Durfee, a lifelong resident of Tooele County. She was unable to make it to this meeting today. She wrote, "Recently, I had the idea of renaming the Utah Inland Port Authority to the Utah Inland Port Abomination, and I still think that is fitting. This is indeed an abomination. Since its creation in 2018 at the 11th hour of the legislative session, it has been a drain on the public and a vehicle in helping developers. In addition to being kept from knowing and participating in the process, we, the general public, will be the lucky ones to pay the hefty price economically and with our health. UIPA likes to spit out rhetoric about only going to communities they are invited to, all of the jobs these will bring to us, how it isn't about helping developers, how it's somehow good for the environment and not having any control over what happens. I'm not familiar with any project where the community as a whole wants it. They are proposed by developers wanting a handout and bamboozling local governments into thinking they are a good idea. Because what community wants to put up millions of dollars for a project without a purpose? Whatever plans that exist are poor copy and paste jobs, quite frankly, containing information from other areas. I still haven't seen anything to demonstrate an economic need to begin with. This is in sharp contrast to a legitimate business. Any port project should get its own private funding, period. If they had to get their own private funding, they would have to provide the information any legitimate business would have to provide instead of the speculative, if we build it, they will come. If these ports are such a great idea, then why does UIPA not want to do the studies agreed on years ago? UIPA agreed to do 3 separate studies, including a health impact assessment, traffic study, and a community impact assessment. Now UIPA is trying to change the studies. That should tell the public everything they need to know about these projects. If UIPA won't do even the very basic agreed upon studies, then there are obviously issues UIPA doesn't want to expose. UIPA should have a full and comprehensive audit and be disbanded before any more harm is done. Stop the polluting ports. Thank you.
Thanks, John. Appreciate it. Thanks to those of you that shared your comments today. All right, let's go to board action, board members. So let's first look at the contracts that Ben Bies presented on earlier. I'm going to go back to my notes that I wrote. It's the finance, public employees retirement system, budget. Ben, remind me of the 3. Sorry, I can't even read my own writing here.
I have a slide, Madam Chair, if you want to go off of that. But finance, payroll, and accounting services is the first one.
So board members, the five-year contracts are in front of you. Again, this is stepping away from the state finance system and moving to more of a privatized, in-controlled, in-house system. Do you have any comments or questions about these contracts? All right. Do we have a motion as presented from Ben?
So moved. This is Ryan.
All right, I have a motion from Ryan. Do I have a second? Jonathan, I think we're going to do a roll call vote. Jerry, I'll let you conduct that. You were at 17. I think I got you.
Yes, Jonathan Friedman.
Aye.
Jefferson Moss.
Aye.
Jerry Stevenson.
Aye.
Ryan Starks.
Aye.
And Abby Osborne.
Yes.
Thank you.
All right, let's look at the resolutions up next. Larry, will you read the resolution into the record, please?
Yes, let me make sure I'm getting the right one here.
24-03. Yes, this one in front of us.
Okay, thank you. Resolution 2024-03, a resolution requesting admission to the public employees retirement system.
This is just a continuation into URS. URS will take this up in their May meeting. Any questions from the board members? If not, I'll take a motion and a second.
I would move that we adopt resolution 2024-03, the admission to the public employees retirement system.
And a second. Jonathan, Larry, will you roll call vote that, please?
Yes. Jonathan Friedman. Jefferson Moss.
Aye.
Jerry Stevenson.
Aye.
Ryan Starks.
Yes.
And Abby Osborne.
Yes.
Thank you.
So next up, it's the approval of the contract clarification for the Lakeshore Learning Materials. Is there anyone on the board that has any questions? And if not, we'll take motion from the board and a second. Jerry, I'll...
My light's still on.
I'm going to leave all of your lights on.
Okay,
so I'm
thank you.
Figure out who's who here.
I would move approval of Lakeshore Learning Materials incentive clarification.
Any second. Jefferson, second. Larry, roll call vote again.
Yes. Jonathan Friedman.
Aye.
Jefferson Moss.
Aye.
Jerry Stevenson.
Aye.
Ryan Starks.
Aye.
And Abby Osborne.
Yes. All right, the two policies, the record retention and the segregation of duties. Again, these were approved, these were looked at in the January meeting and we're looking at final approval today. Any comments on either of those two policies? And if not, I'll take a motion in a second. Jonathan?
Second.
And Jefferson. Perfect. Larry, back to you for roll call.
Great. Jonathan Friedman? Jefferson Moss.
Aye.
Jerry Stevenson.
Aye.
Ryan Starks.
Yes.
Abby Osborne.
Yes. All right, Larry, to you for the consideration of resolution 2024-04. It's a lot of 04s in there.
Yes.
The TV, the Tooele Valley, not MTV, good. Public Infrastructure District. Okay. We read that in.
Later. Yes. Resolution 2024-4, a resolution of the Board of Directors of the Utah Inland Port Authority providing for the creation of the TV Public Infrastructure District as an independent district, authorizing and approving a governing document and interlocal agreement, appointing a board of trustees, authorizing other documents in connection therewith and related matters.
Any comments on that resolution before we take a motion and a second? All right. Jerry, I see the motion from you.
Resolution to adopt 2024-04, creating a public Tooele Valley Public Infrastructure District. Creating Tooele Valley Public Infrastructure District.
There you go. Any second. Jonathan, Larry, we'll roll call vote.
Yes, Jonathan Friedman.
Aye.
Jefferson Moss.
Aye.
Jerry Stevenson. Ryan Starks.
Aye.
And Abby Osborne.
Yes. All right, we got two more board. The Spanish Fork City approval of the interlocal agreement. It's the revised interlocal agreement. We'll take a motion and a second to the map that we saw earlier. No, just to the revised, triggering the map, which we'll do next. I'm just going to keep looking at you.
All right. I would move for approval of the Spanish Fork interlocal agreement.
Perfect. Do we have a second? Jonathan, Larry, will you roll call vote, please?
Yes. Jonathan Friedman.
Aye.
Jefferson Moss.
Aye.
Jerry Stevenson.
Aye.
Ryan Starks.
Aye.
Abby Osborne.
Yes.
Thank you.
All right. Then finally, let's move to the trigger resolution, which is the map of the 200 parcels inside the VRC Project Industrial Park area. Larry, will you read the resolution, please?
Yes, this is resolution 2024-2, trigger resolution for the VRC Industrial Park project area.
All right, looking for a motion and a second, board members. Jerry?
I'm going to roll here.
You
Thank
are.
Thank you. I would move that we approve resolution 2024-2 that triggers a resolution for the VRC Industrial Park Inland Port Project area.
Jonathan, coming to you, and Jonathan's the second. Larry, roll call vote, please.
Yes, Jonathan Friedman.
Aye.
Jefferson Moss.
Aye.
Jerry Stevenson.
Aye.
Ryan Starks.
Aye.
Abby Osborne.
Yes. Board, thanks for the rapid go there. I will now entertain a motion to move to a closed session, which will be held now at 4:16 p.m. in this room, 445 at the Utah State Capitol, 350 South State Street in Salt Lake City, and via electronic meeting for the purpose of the strategy session to discuss the purchase, exchange, or lease of real property, as allowed and described in sections 52-4-204 and 205 in the Utah Code and under the Open and Public Meetings Act. Do I have a motion?
I would move that we go into a closed door. Basically everything you said, closed door for the discussion of real estate purposes.
Thanks, Jerry. Do I have a second, gentlemen? Jefferson, Larry, can you roll call vote that one as well?
Yes. Jonathan Friedman.
Aye.
Jefferson Moss.
Aye.
Jerry Stevenson.
Aye.
Ryan Starks.
Yes.
And Abby Osborne.
Yes.